So this morning, I'm on the phone with you, Paige, as I'm walking into work. And
yes, as we do.
And as I do, I'm walking by myself, and I know my way from home to the office. But this time, I was too distracted on the phone, which never is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And there's this like hole in the wall that leads from the street into this neighborhood, and I must have passed it. So I'm like, come to this other opening to turn left. And I'm like, oh, did I miss it? Did I not go far enough? I'm like, so I walked back, but I think I walked back too. So I'm totally confused where I am.
Turned around.
And I'm like, oh, am I going to be late to work? I have I have exams to give.
Yeah.
Oh no. And so I walk a little further, and I'm like, walk up to something, and somebody's like, oh, can I help you? And I go, where am I?
Yeah.
And he says,
are you okay?
He's like, you're at the drive-thru. I'm like, what drive-thru?
Yeah.
What drive-thru? That's around the corner from my house.
Yeah.
And so he's like, oh, the spot you're looking for is just that way. And I'm like, okay, I'm back on track.
Oh man.
So yeah, just the daily things of funny things that I run into as I forget to pay close attention to where I am when I'm walking with my cane, and I kind of know where I'm going, but sometimes I can get off track.
Well, and then like the stranger jumping out and actually probably saving you in a way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Saving or at least being helpful, because so many.
Yeah, right.
I don't see them, but I've heard from others who tell me people will watch you and they look like they want to help, but they don't know how. And there's this almost if you can make it into a movie kind of slow motion of, is there something I'm supposed to do?
Right.
Is there something I'm not
supposed
to do?
How do I help you?
And I want to say, yes, please. I'm open for help.
I'm a helpful person.
I'm a helpful person, and I'm kind. I won't snap at you. So, but because we don't want to be insensitive to people, so then there's this paralyzed, like, oh, maybe he's independent and doesn't what? And,
yeah.
Or maybe he knows what he's doing, walking around in circles here at the drive-thru.
No.
So, I don't know. It's just...
Oh, man.
Every day, something... I mean, not every day, but many days, something... And it's like... I'll forget about it 3 days from now because it's just part of life.
Right.
Yeah. So, you've been getting to know me. There's all kinds of times I share stories with you or whatever. And you're just like, well, I'm still learning what questions I have about this situation.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. All the time. I think that, the kind of concept of help, right? It's such it's like almost taboo. Like, how do you know when to help? How much help do you offer? Is it rude to offer help? Is it helpful to offer help? And I think a lot of us kind of get bound in this like internal dialogue of just helping somebody. And then you're like, well, the window's closed.
Well, I think, well, and also some people want to help, but then they want to help in a way that's not helpful.
Right.
Because like, here, I'll
tell you the help you need.
And so sometimes they'll come like, oh, let me help you. And then they put their hand on my shoulder or the back of my neck.
Yeah.
And my elbow. And like, I'll guide you in the sense of like, I'll push you into where you're going.
Oh my gosh.
And it's not like they're trying to be mean. It's just like, some people just don't know how to ask, how do I guide you?
Right.
Or how do I assist you?
Right.
And they're being helpful, except kind of not.
Right.
So I always struggle with like, okay, do I just say, oh, let's do it this way? Because sometimes it's hard to be heard on how, like how best to process this together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's that whole idea of how do we live together?
Right.
And so in any relationship, there's the give and take, and mm-hmm. any kind of reciprocity, mm-hmm. there's reciprocity. Is my help being received as helpful,
right?
Or am I serving in a way that's actually not being yeah. felt as serving?
It's the opposite of helpful.
And I think it was a quote Dwayne Elmer had in his book Serving Cross Culturally that really just jumped out to me when I was serving in Thailand. It's like this book, and he's like, we need to ask ourselves when we're serving others, is the thing that we're doing to serve you actually being received as serving?
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing in things with quote unquote disabilities. Mm-hmm. Like there's clearly times when people need help.
Yeah.
Myself. I mean, there's clearly times I'm glad to have help finding my way across the street if I'm in an unfamiliar spot or if
right.
I'm lost.
Right.
There's also times I don't need help. And so like, you can ask, and I'll be like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
But the question that we don't ask as one helping is, hey, is the thing I'm offering a thing that I think is solving the problem, or is it actually helping you with the problem that you're actually in?
Right. Because we like to like analyze the problem and then apply, well, this would be helpful for me maybe, or I think I know how to help. And then we just do it. We could just
start, solve it as fast as we can and move on with our day.
Right. Time is definitely of the essence.
For everybody, except for the person who's like, this isn't helping.
Yeah.
Let's slow it down a little bit. Another 30 seconds of your day is okay.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, that's the whole thing with interdependence and and help. And I think that's one of the things we're without one of our co-hosts, Salma, and we should introduce ourselves. We're already this far in. So maybe we just introduce ourselves now. I'm Andy Opie.
And I'm Paige Pester.
And I teach at Life Pacific.
I also teach at Life Pacific.
And we're missing Salma, who's often on this with us.
Yeah.
But we are doing this podcast, Blind Faith, where we're exploring thoughts about God and life in this world. And our ethos is all scholarship is biography. And so sharing story helps. And so this is a real good intro into what we have today. Paige and I had an opportunity to sit down virtually with Debbie Kramer, who really helped us really think more carefully about how we understand what is disability and gave us some models of disability. Mm-hmm. So really looking forward to that. I think you'll all enjoy.
I was stuck in a labyrinth, called it a palace. He brought me out and gave me eyes to see all my own.
I'm so grateful that we get to have a conversation with Debbie Kramer. She has been meaningful to me in my study and her work on disability theology and in particular her book, Disability and Christian Theology, and some of her articles. She taught at ILF School of Theology in Denver and just has such a rich, curious, kind way of approaching these issues. And I haven't interacted with her until I was like, I would really love to have her on the podcast. And then I was like, okay, but where is she now? What contact is the best way? And so I reached out to my friend, Jim Moore, who worked with you at ATS. And then,
oh yeah.
And then he's like, well, he was the one that found your Substack. He's like, you could try this. And then Paige helped me actually like really track you down. So glad that the emails that we've had, and now I'm looking forward to this conversation. Thank you so much for coming and being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and I'm so glad you were able to track me down. I haven't been writing much for the last probably half dozen years at least, because I did go work a job after I finished teaching at the Association of Theological Schools with Jim Moore. And then I had a new experience of disability 2 years ago when I had a spinal cord injury, which maybe we can talk a little bit more as we go on here. But anyhow, I'm glad you found me, and I'm glad for the chance to explore some of these ideas with you today.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you. Here at the podcast, we sort of have a slogan or this ethos that all scholarship is biography. So before we really get into the discussion here, would you mind sharing with us how you found yourself really in the field of disability theology?
Yeah, it is a fun biographical story, because that's almost the only way I can tell it. And it interestingly all came about because of an assignment I had in a feminist theology class during my Master of Divinity program. And I wonder sometimes if I hadn't had that one assignment, where I would have ended up.
There you go.
Yeah, just those things happen, right? Mm-hmm. So this was very early 90s, and I was in a feminist theology class at Vanderbilt Divinity School.
Okay.
And it, And it was taught by Sally McFaig and Marianne Tolbert, who are two names that theology nerds, especially folks who are on the more feminist or liberationist side, will know well.
I'm not nerdy enough yet, so I'm going to write those down. Or maybe again, they're before my time. I mean, there's,
Exactly. They're sort of dated now, but Sally McFaig was really well known for her work both on metaphors and later on climate justice.
Yeah, that's why I know her name, Metaphor. Okay. Yep. I was like, name sounded familiar. The second one didn't as much.
Yeah, Marianne Tolbert was a feminist biblical scholar who also was one of the early folks to work on queer biblical interpretation. So, and I just knew them as my professors.
Sure.
And at this point, particularly in predominantly white or historically white institutions, we're just kind of getting the idea of like, oh, feminist, that's not just a single thing, that's multiple things, including, for example, folks from different racial or cultural backgrounds than the white ethos are going to have different perspectives on theology. But Sally and Marianne just assigned to us, pick something that's, quote, different.
Say that one more time. Pick something that's, quote, different. Such an open-ended question.
Mostly to get out of that we were enmeshed in all of the feminist theology stuff, but to really be like, okay, feminists are not a single thing. So they gave us examples like you might look at theology from the perspective of mothers or women who've been mothers. You might look at it from the example of Black women. You might look at it at the example, so some of my classmates did, women who were experiencing poverty or experiencing homelessness. And so it was just a range of kind of creative things. And it was one of those where you did a paper proposal, and then at the end of the semester, you had your big paper. So I had just been kind of toying around in my head because of a few experiences that had happened recently. One was I knew I was part of a family gathering for Easter where one of the kids hadn't been allowed to participate in Palm Sunday service because she had muscular dystrophy and walked with a limp. And they didn't think she would want to be embarrassed by processing in with the palms so, on Palm Sunday.
So instead they embarrassed her in a different way.
Exactly. And she was clever enough to be pissed off by it.
Fair.
To be like, well, you know, it's not like God isn't going to want me there. It's you all who apparently don't want me there. And I was just really moved by that. And then I also just had been reflecting because I didn't really articulate it well then, but I'd been living with chronic pain since I was in high school where I'd had a series of surgeries on my knees and the pain just never got better. And so thinking about that, thinking about the time after I'd had surgeries when I had been an occasional wheelchair user, like at the shopping mall or at the amusement park, and how people just treated me different when I was in the wheelchair, like would ask my brother or whoever was with me, you know, what does she want to eat? And he'd be like, you could just ask her yourself.
I've been in a wheelchair situation, but so, as somebody without sight, get those kind of questions all the time to the person I'm with.
And so just kind of piecing moments together like that. So I was like, oh, this is a topic nobody else has picked. We haven't read it anywhere else in our class. So I went over to the library, and again, it's Vanderbilt University, so pretty good library, right? And all I could find, and again, this was the very early 90s, Nancy Easland's book, The Disabled God, had not even come out
yet. I was going to say, it's not even there. Yeah, so go on.
Yeah. So what I found was a couple of chaplaincy books that were like, oh, poor parents, your child is disabled. What are you going to do? Very negative and paternalistic and not at all what I was looking for or hoping to find.
How exciting. Couple books. I want to say how exciting. Mm-hmm. You're not finding it. You're like, there's something here.
So that's exactly what happened. So, and then I found a couple books of memoir that talked a little bit about religion and mostly about how problematic the church was.
Do you remember who? I'm sorry. Like to ask you, remember who?
From they were the ones I found at that time were like edited volumes or gatherings of short stories. I can send you the names afterwards because I'm sure they're in my bibliographies somewhere. But they were just little bitty pieces, not even long reflections. And so I went to Sally McFaig and I said, in my little proposal, you know, I'm not finding anything, but this is what I'm interested in writing about. And so I met with her and she's like, what you said, well, that's cool that you didn't find anything. You're just going to have to write it.
and then it's no longer cool. Cause then you're like, oh no, how do I do something that's not there?
Yeah,
that's exactly it. And you know, at this time I'm, you know, maybe 21. No, I would be, what would I be? Anyhow, mid 20s, probably. In the middle of my Master of Divinity school, which I did right after college. So I'm still like, I don't know theology, what theology is yet, let alone how I'm going to write
something new.
Exactly. So, but piecing together little bits of stories that I knew and then building off of other kinds of liberation theologies that are like, okay, let's pay attention to, in this case, ableism. So where the messages are coming in that people with disabilities are not qualified or not eligible. And so I started to be like, hey, like even the churches that maybe have, and thinking from mobility impairments in particular was my lens. But so churches that maybe have a cutout for where a wheelchair can go.
Did you say maybe?
In the sanctuary.
I just want to say, I want to say that again for sarcasm. Did you say maybe have that?
I said maybe, like maybe they have that.
Yeah.
And maybe they've done the hard work to get an elevator, which is awesomely hard work. In the 90s,
oh my goodness, in the 90s, probably very rare. Yeah.
Yeah. But have they thought about how people might get to the choir loft? Or
our denomination is Pentecostal, which is whatever. But then we had a 100-year centennial of the founding of our movement 2 years ago. So let's put it now into 2023. And it was being hosted, or we spent the money to have it held at the Anaheim Convention Center. So Anaheim, right next to Disneyland in Orange County, like a super wealthy part of California. And I'm... You know, I love to be the greeter because I like to smile and whatever. So I don't always see where the people are, but they see me and they come by and I greet as they're coming in. And I don't like to stir the pot. I really don't. And so then I'm talking to somebody who's in charge of greeting and they're like, there's actually not a lot of accessibility in this huge multi-thousand person like venue on how to get people upstairs to the balcony or how to like, there's just very little accessibility. And this is Anaheim Convention Center. This isn't a church. This is the public. And I'm like, this is terrible. This is 2023.
Yeah.
So when you're saying, I mean, and the church is usually a step behind. And so you're saying 1990s, maybe there's a ramp. Maybe they might have even imagined an elevator, much less done the hard work to get one. So go on. You're sharing the biography.
Yeah. But then from there, have they thought about getting people, allowing, making space for people with disabilities, especially again, mobility from my lens, to get up to the choir loft, to get downstairs to youth group, or to get up front to the pulpit. And most churches that I was working with at that time, they didn't even imagine. They're like, we've done enough. We did the elevator and the cutouts, right? The sorts of bits and pieces turned up into my paper for that class. And Sally said, you know, you might think about publishing this. And I was like, it's a term paper for a class.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but for the rest of my MDiv program, she and a couple other faculty just kept encouraging me to play with the topic, which then ended up the topic of my master's thesis, which I called The Withered Hand of God. Based on the, there's a Michelangelo image where God, old white man God, is pointing his finger down, and Adam, the perfect man, is pointing his finger up, and they touch. And I was like, what if we imagined God with a withered hand, taking the withered hand image from the Bible? Anyhow,
when you say taking it from the Bible, where I'm trying to think where, I love that the imagery you're playing with. Where's the imagery in the Bible, the withered hand that I'm thinking. Is that?
I honestly can't remember. As soon as I said that,
I don't mean what text, but like, is,
yeah,
the story. I'm just trying to think. Is that like, is that imagery that was reference to God, or is that?
One of the healing
stories of the man with the withered hand. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the healing stories.
But if we imagine God, like you said, old white man, like we imagine and depict God in our drawings in such human ways, but what about this other human way? Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and that's really where my limits model started to creep in, was thinking about, what if we turn some of this disability stuff, and especially the church's anxiety or lack of attention or whatever it is, what if we turn it on its head and really place disability in a forefront that makes folks who are currently not disabled really face it and really not other it. So not say like, oh, disability is this other thing.
Right.
My proposal or the piece I wanted to add was, no, really, it's not that it's not an other. It's in the mix of everything. Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad thing. And so if we're saying, and especially here, I'm talking about, again, the historically white, more liberal mainline churches who are like, yeah, we love disabled people. But I might know one as a friend, you know, that old language from racist places. But
yeah, right. I get that all the time.
I have a black friend. Yeah.
I get that all the time at the grocery counter, checkout. Oh, I have an uncle who's blind. Like, uh-huh.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Like,
good for you.
Like, just right. Yeah. So what if we actually at least try on this idea that limits are an intrinsic part of being human and aren't a flaw. Mm-hmm. They're actually part of the design, and it's got there are characteristics of it that we could even not only imagine into God, but for folks from the Christian tradition can find scriptural parallels. Mm-hmm. And that's where I proposed that some of the stuff I'm starting to play with again now, that if part of my, I don't know, imagination or creativity around disability is thinking about, you know, folks who are disabled, both, and I mean that both like physical body and also social barriers, we tend to exhibit more creativity because we have to figure out different ways to make things work. We experience or exhibit more perseverance. We have to keep trying and trying, or, knocking down the door, or, trying to raise our voice to be heard.
Yeah. I love that you bring up that perseverance too, because I think we do have the tendency to like, well, I tried this and I tried this, you know, but it's like you haven't tried everything. So
yeah,
there's still more to try.
Yeah, exactly. And then the third one that I named was interdependence. Like for folks with disability, both we understand that we rely on a network of people. Mm-hmm. And when the non-disabled look at us, they see, oh, that person needs, and whatever it is, whether it's a white cane or a wheelchair, mm-hmm. or a person who's an assistant with them, or mm-hmm. the bus driver who slows down.
Right.
And I'm like, let's look at scripture. We see God being creative. We see stories of God persevering. Mm-hmm. Like God doesn't give up. God tries something else. God tries something else to get people to listen.
Right.
And God shows interdependence. And those are stories we don't often tell. But the experience of disability, then those experiences are characteristics we can see in God. And to turn it kind of full circle around, if we freak out, or if they freak out with the idea that God might be disabled, or that that's an image of God we could play on, mm-hmm. That means folks are still full of ableism, thinking mm-hmm. disability is a bad thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to Blind Faith. Now, a word from our sponsor. Are you ready to hear who's sponsoring this podcast?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Mall of America?
No.
Have you ever wanted to be the Mall of America?
No. Yes.
Oh.
Okay, one yes, one no. But what if I told you DeLeo Brothers Pizza? Okay.
I changed my answer.
One of the best pizzas in all of Minnesota, as voted by the people that vote for that. And here's their slogan. In garlic, we crust.
Oh.
Now you want to go to the Mall of America, don't you?
I'm going to the Mall of America right now.
Let's take a flight.
And they have a second location opening in Seattle. So look it up on this thing called Google. And DeLeo Brothers Pizza, bringing you Blind Faith Podcast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now back to our regularly scheduled programming. I want to come back to interdependence in a moment. But and I also want to, this is where I wish I could edit in the moment. And as you're talking about knock, knock in the door down, I wanted to be having Bob Dylan's song, Knock, Knock, Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Yeah,
in the background, just to let that play for a moment. But when you're sharing about liberation theologies and your professors and feminist theology, I wrestle with the question of disability hermeneutics, disability theology. And yes, it's in many ways, it's on the shoulders of those that you mentioned and others like Nancy Eisland, who's talks about it as a liberatory theology. But then at the same time, because some hear the word liberation, at least in the circles I run in, and like, oh, and no, not liberation theology. And I want to say, well, okay, so it's okay to have domination theology.
yeah.
You know, what I am trying to find the way to say more succinctly is, because at some point we all encounter disability, and I'm not saying we all are, but at some point we all encounter, why did every time I quote her, I forget her name, but, that whether by accident or sickness or age, that this idea of, well, this will lead down the road to your stuff about limits, but because disability as a hermeneutic is a way to, quote, disable the power, quote unquote, structures of how we do theology, of how we do education, of how we do so on. And disability hermeneutic, I almost want to take it out from under the umbrella of liberation theology, even though there's places of parallel and connection, because it's its own different thing. Am I making sense of what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is partly what I was, it's a tension even inside my limits model. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things from the beginning, like I never wanted to say like the limits model is the only model. Mm-hmm. I think it has to stand alongside mm-hmm. moral, medical, and social models. But there's also this bit of it that when I play with it, and especially when I'm in conversation with folks and we're kind of, you know, messing it together, there is this, I hate to say this word, but there is this kind of universal.
Yeah.
Or entanglement of the disability stuff that's much more than any kind of us versus them or this versus that. Like it's not part of any binary.
Yeah, right.
It's not part of any it's different.
Well, because I remember even bringing some of this up before I was even super down the path of disability theology, because I didn't even know to go there, even though I'm studying in a PhD and living with a so-called disability, blindness. And I'm talking to the sociology professor who studied in Singapore and did work on stuff related to China and so on. So I'm talking to her. So she's, you know, through the lens of sociology saying, oh, your approach to whatever I was going to study. And so disability wasn't the question in there, like in the strictest sense of the terms, but it was, oh, like, she's like, I am Chinese, from Malaysia, but studied in Singapore. Mm-hmm. And she's like, if I go to Purdue where she's doing postdoctoral work, then I'm minoritized in these ways. But if I'm in Malaysia or Singapore, like I'm in a majority space, even though maybe as a woman, that difference. But she's like, but wherever you go in the world, you're going to have this sense of like, I forget the wording, but like what you're saying, that it's complicated to just say it in a binary of us and them and this and that, but you're always going to have that ableist or discriminatory thing that there's not a space where you go where, oh, now we're the ones that have privilege or whatever. So,
right. Yeah. Right.
Unpack your, I guess this is a good place. You've hinted at it a little bit, the limits model. And just for our audience that haven't read, and which is fine, there's not any prerequisite that they listen with reading. But you can unpack the, probably better than I will, the moral and so on and so on, as succinctly as you want. But then how that you wanted to move beyond them into something that might help us be in tension with some of these things that aren't so easily answered in these other models.
Yeah, that's a really nice preface into it, because that was my intention. It was just to add, I stole this language from somebody else, but to add another piece of the puzzle, to add another square of the quilt.
Yeah.
And what I had found at that time was really a moral model of disability, which was disability is either good or bad. And to kind of trace that back to, it's either angelic or demonic. Mm-hmm. So either, you know what, Andy, you're so inspirational. Like you're just really inspirational.
Yeah, I get that all the time.
I tell him all the time, like, Andy, you're amazing. Yeah.
And I mean, I know why you're saying this, but I've had to wrestle with, like, and I forget who it is now. I read it in other places, but inspiration porn, and this Australian lady who was like, stop putting me on the platform just for that reason. And so I'm like, okay, I don't want that. But there are times where through my life and what the Lord has given me to say, the Holy Spirit can be the so I'm like trying to find that middle ground myself, but I've lived that. Oh, I don't even see that you're disabled. Oh, you're so well, but there's all these other blind people that climb Mount Everest or this other thing, and I'm not even close to that inspirational.
Yeah.
But I know what, so yeah, I know you're kind of hinting at it, but please do say say that as clearly and almost sarcastically as you're trying to get to.
Yeah. So with moral, it really is the like, even if I know nothing about you, I admire you. I think you're inspiration, like the inspiration porn, or I think there's something wrong with you. Like, and again, in older times or in less political correct kinds of ways, mm-hmm. that would have been like, you know, I'm not going to want to associate with you. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want my friend dating you. Would worry about what kinds of kids might, you know, all those sorts of like.
Oh, I'd have weird ones. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Because my wife deals with us all the time when we go into stores. Oh, are you guys brother and sister? Oh, like, because they just won't, mm-hmm. and their imagination will not allow them to,
wow.
to think that
yeah.
we might be married. Or the other thing is, oh, that's so nice that you were willing to marry him and like pity him. Like, she gets it yeah. all the time. And wow. I just ignore it because I don't really hear it as much as she does, but it drives her crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, so,
yeah.
So yeah, that's yeah. That's the moral model. Like, oh, uh-huh. that person, don't associate with them. They might procreate weird children, or they might get
that's
you,
right.
they might
yeah.
get you sick too, or they might get you, you know, yeah. whatever.
Yep. Yep. So there's that. There's the medical model. And I don't mean to throw all medical professionals under the bus with this, but the model itself is the there's something wrong with you. It's broken. We need to fix it. Mm-hmm. And it's judged based on x-rays mm-hmm. and test results and the whole sense that you should be fixed. And if you can't be fixed, you're just always going to be defective. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a very medical way of looking at it, or to say like, oh, here's this blind guy who's having a conversation with a spinal cord victim.
Uh-huh.
Right. And just using that language of here's your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then any other details might come after that.
Right.
So that's medical.
Mm-hmm.
And then social, which is the language that I had encountered at that time, which is also like a minority model, would yeah. be the one mm-hmm. that puts ableism first. Like the problem isn't that. Well, so I use when I was teaching, I would use a cartoon.
Oh.
And the cartoon shows just a regular old white steeple country church.
Uh-huh.
With a whole set of steps leading uh-huh. up to the front door.
Right.
A sign on the bottom saying all are welcome. And I would say, you know, where's the problem here?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
And this is where Paige is supposed to answer. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
The problem is all actually aren't able to get in there.
Yeah.
That's
so all
right.
are not welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the social model or the minority model, the problem would be, yeah, the lack of imagination from the people who built it to think that wheelchair users or folks with mobility impairment might come.
Yeah.
The problem is a set of stairs, mm-hmm. Not the person who doesn't climb stairs. The mm-hmm. problem is the sign that imagines all. So it's all these other barriers
right.
that have nothing to do with the actual person who might want to join the church.
Right.
So that led you to limits. And can you just briefly define, because I even reflecting recently, interacting with some of your thoughts, and reflect, I think I misused it in some of my writing in my dissertation, is like, we all have limitations, but that's not what you're saying. You're not saying we're all human limitations, but you are kind of hinting at that's how it helps us understand our humanity. So I'd like to be more clear myself. Could you briefly say, and then I have some questions based on what you're saying.
Okay, great. Yeah. And first off, I'll say, I don't think there's any misusing, because like I articulated it in a way that other people have found useful and have picked it up,
mm-hmm.
but I rarely would call it my model, or like I have a stamp of approval of, of where it goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the way I thought of it, it really was kind of, again, in a messy tension kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
One is saying like, yeah, actually, folks, we do all have limits, and it's the lack of imagination that says that the one that I wrote that, again, sometimes gets taken in a way that I didn't really mean it, but I was in my mid-20s. I didn't know any better. But, so I would say, why is it that I can't fly?
Yeah, I love that one.
It's just seen as normal and ordinary. Yeah. But to say I can't walk means there's a problem with me.
Mm.
Those are all just different kinds of limits. And it's this arbitrary little line that gets drawn to say some limits are ordinary and some limits are not.
Mm. Well, I mean, I could ask a bazillion questions based on that, because of all the more current conversations, whether around neurodivergence, quote unquote, and like what's normal, what's abnormal. And
right.
I love Tom Reynolds' discussions on the cult of normalcy and
mm-hmm.
but my question I want to ask you is in the sense of, I mean, I love that, that's where I wanted to come to, is the flying metaphor, or not metaphor, but that analogy. But you draw out a bunch of examples, I think, in your writing, and probably more than I'm remembering, but eyeglasses and so on and so on, different assistive technologies that we use and don't think twice about them. But the flying one, I've been reflecting recently, like the imagery in the Bible of God carrying us on the wings of an eagle, which is throughout in different times. And mm-hmm. and even in that eagle is drawn from it's not a masculine picture, even though for a long time I imagined it this big, strong boy. But it's a mother eagle that's mm-hmm. native to that part of what we now call Israel, Palestine, but native to that part of the world, that would be probably on a cliff at some point. And then the mom is swooping down to pick up the child because the child's in trouble. And so it's picking up the child to rescue, to carry, to restore, all this, the imagery that the Bible uses it for. And so one, it's depicting God as a mother, but two, it's depicting, the idea of interdependence and dependence and neediness and vulnerability. And so like, if the Bible has this beautiful metaphor of assisting,
mm-hmm.
it's not technology, like that's all we think about today, but how does that help us think about like humanness and limits and so on?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I stumped you. So that's the one I've been pondering over the past maybe 2 weeks. But limits, I think you could maybe share some of the other examples that you have in your writing, though, about how that helps us see that we don't think twice about this, saying this is a limit mm-hmm. and this is part of being human, whether mm-hmm. it's driving in a car or whatever things, the moving walkway at the airport, like, you know, mm-hmm. we all use it, like, but, and some people just use it to move faster and push people out of the way. That's a whole nother, but there's you have a list of, or not list, but ongoing imagination beyond what you actually wrote, I'm sure, on unpacking limits.
Yeah, and it is that, this kind of flipping the either the imagination or the awareness or something with folks. And I love that image of flying, because in some ways, with God providing the mother eagle or being the mother eagle, like that's a way of accommodating for the fact that humans aren't able to fly or not fly the speed and the places or whatever that mm-hmm. that image takes us.
Yeah.
So similarly with my others, like I will play with like, okay, so you're gonna like look at me weirdly because I get around in a power wheelchair, but then you're gonna get in your car or you're gonna get on your bicycle. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I can't move, like
right.
the issue is similar, like they can't walk 20 miles in an hour to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. So they need a car.
Right.
I can't walk off of my bed. Mm-hmm. And so I use a power chair. But mm-hmm. there's a gradation in there mm-hmm. that folks that our culture or society or whatever has kind of tweaked so we don't see it. One of the ones I use is that when you see a hearing aid mm-hmm. in a 99-year-old grandmother or an elderly man in a shopping area, you don't think twice, and you especially don't think twice with like pity or that like weird curiosity, like almost voyeurism.
Oh, yeah.
But if you see a 4-year-old with a mm-hmm. hearing device, mm-hmm. You start to like focus in on that, and then like it's weird or it's wrong or something's wrong.
Something's wrong, yeah.
And so this helps what you do helps the discussion moving from disability activism and so on. Activists and to say like, oh, we need political policies to make space for people. But what you're doing in theology is helping us see, hey, this is also human. This mm-hmm. is also human. And in light of who God is, if we are in the image of God. So mm-hmm. then you draw it to the three limits you said earlier about creativity and persistence or perseverance. Mm-hmm. And the one I want to draw out a little more is interdependence. And maybe you do in many ways that I'm forgetting, but the triune God is complicated and confusing and messy as we've made that over the years. That is right there in Genesis 1. He created them in his image, male and female. He created, and the language there, let us create them in our image. Like there's mm-hmm. already that sense of human is not one. And, mm-hmm. and it's, one thing when we talk male, female, like that human isn't, it's not created man, but he created humans in mm-hmm. like male and female in that moment. Male and female was embedded in that moment. So the diversity of male and female, which then can be drawn out to gender and ethnicity and so on. But this is probably one that a lot of Christians might struggle with. Okay, but he didn't intend for brokenness. He didn't intend for it. But the interdependence might help us see the humanness, because God doesn't depict himself as, even in Genesis 1, as one only, but as three in one. And mm-hmm. what does that interdependence, I'm trying to avoid the boring theology words, but that of the economy but like what ways does that help us see who God is in light of mm-hmm. who he's created us to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, both the ableism that makes anything that seems like disability seem like problematic or less than, mm-hmm. and then what I hope for with this limits piece is to, both to kind of break down some of that, in humans, but also allow us to look at some of these metaphors for God or images of God that have been there, mm-hmm. But we really don't consider them in their fullness. Mm-hmm. Because like, what if we say, I had someone shared with me anonymously a student paper, so I can't attribute this, sure. which I wish I could, but that really like fleshed out that the Trinity is itself this marker of interdependence.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And that God, it's not, even the Christian scriptures, the gospels are not about exactly of God's embodiment coming and being on earth. It's about God's son coming and being on earth. So again, it is a different part or a different something mm-hmm. that there's this interdependence with it. You know, Jesus talks to God. So that's interdependence right there. And we don't tell those stories because we don't notice those stories or don't see or attend to the things that looking at this from a more looking at the limits piece could let us see and say things about God that we've closed ourselves off to. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping we can open ourselves up to some of it instead.
Well, and you mentioned Jesus, so it leads to questions on Christology, like who is mm-hmm. Christ, the God part of Christ, things that I didn't get to explore that hopefully one day I do get to run down these roads, because I have too many roads of things I'm writing on right now, but that then lead to impassibility of God and not just Jürgen Moltmann who wrestled with that, but this guy from Japan in the 60s, and why am I forgetting his name, but I didn't do research to come to the podcast, but he was one that I have his book, but it wasn't accessible, and I wasn't ending up going down that road, but these ideas of does God suffer impassibility, like, and I just can't, who knows, I'm not the expert, how does Jesus on the cross, the embodiment of God the Son, not suffer? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And also, how does God the Father somehow just like just seems so patriarchal? I don't know what better word. Like, I just don't feel those emotions because I'm not in touch with my emotions. I don't know. Like, right. How does God the Father not suffer watching the reality of what happens because of sin exhibited on the cross? So I just don't know how we can have this place where some say, oh, no, the impassibility, God, like, no, God doesn't suffer, because why? It's almost like, well, why would he? He's beyond that. He's more ideal, more perfect, or something. I don't understand where it comes from, but
yeah. I think for the limit conversation, you said it earlier, and I imagine it has been like a key part of your writing, but how limits aren't flaws. They're part of the design. And I think you kept coming back to this kind of like imagination, and it's, man, that's so like profound for me, as a minister and as a pastor and as a Christian and as a you know, fellow part of the body of Christ, that, you know, if we're not able to get past seeing limits as a flaw, like, we need to be more imaginative, because certainly we should be able to do that. And, that's just been, I feel like you guys keep coming back to this kind of idea of like, oh, we've got to be more imaginative on this.
And I think it speaks to how we turn people into idols. We worship celebrities and all this junk that we do. And then if we bring it into Christian theology, like why do we make certain gifts or giftings, whether natural or spiritual gifts, like, why do we make certain things the thing we quote unquote give more honor to? Why do we do these things? I mean, it could come back to the whole question of Saul and David, like he's a head and shoulders above the rest. Like, there's this sense of he fits the mold. Not that, and I mean, I don't think God was picking him because God's like, oh, you look like the king, but he gave them the king they would want, since they wanted a king like their neighbors had, and he was honestly in many ways a king in the mold of a mighty king, and yet that's probably part of his downfall too, as he got arrogant and rebellious and self-absorbed, but then the one he picks to follow, that is this guy who was, we probably paint him in our art so many ways that are heroic, but he was basically the one that wasn't even invited to the table. He was the one that was like, out of this many sons, hey, the first, no, second, no. And to the point then, the prophet says, do you have any more? And the answer is,
where are they?
And the answer is, yeah, we do, but we didn't even like consider that he could potentially be anything. And so, I mean, there's so much we could play with that. So I'm trying to be brief. But I think it's what you're talking about speaks to how we, even as Christians, get entrapped to this idea of worshiping other Christians, of being like, you're so amazing. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, it's I like that that language of worship there, because it is starting to worship perfection or worship wholeness and completeness in a way that means we're not telling all of the stories that we could, and we're not attending to the complexity and the messiness of some of this. So we paint, and I mean that, I guess, both literally, because you're right, as I think about art and the way that some of that comes out, but also imaginatively, or no, just painted statically, I guess, in our brains. Statically. That my hope would be, my hope has been that some of the work that the limits model causes us to do or invites us to do lets us flip some of that on its head or dig into some of these paradoxes or parables that are in scripture, that are in the history of the church, that are in even the way we do rituals or the way we dress up pretty to go to church services, or don't talk about the hard stuff that's going on at home or in our jobs. I mean, maybe we do, and I don't mean to paint all churches with that paintbrush either, but so often, especially in the spaces where I've been, you dress up in your Sunday best, and you act the way people think you ought to act.
Right.
And that messiness and the limits, intrinsic limits, socially forced limits, all of it. Mm. Like we leave those outside the door of the church or of the country club or the town gathering space or whatever. And the spaces to me that actually feel more alive and more real are the places where folks are vulnerable and folks are living with the messiness in a public way. So recovery groups, places where folks are doing community organizing. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, maybe that's because I still have that toehold back with a liberationist perspective.
That's okay. Wow. I'm probably, who knows how many people are still listening at this point when it gets released, but I just want to ask you one more question. And if they go, I just want to say thank you so much for being here, but I have one more question. I mean, it's just cause I've been reflecting on, like, when you're writing, well, I love that you brought out that you were reflecting on this before Nancy Eisland's work that kind of spawned a lot more work. But when you were writing your book, Disability and Christian Theology, around the same time as Tom Reynolds was writing Vulnerable Communion and Amos Young was writing Down Syndrome Theology and Down Syndrome, wouldn't like to say the language of like second wave or whatever, but it was almost like there was a cracked door open when Eisland's work came out, and then a couple others, Howard Wass and Hans Reinder, and some might be considering these questions reflectively. But then the works of yourself and Amos and Tom Reynolds, and then some shortly after, that meant a lot in my research. But now there's so much more out there. So what would you say is both one, either exciting about what's going on now, as you're aware of the field, or what are things that you think are still missing in the questions that are being asked?
Good questions.
Yeah, I love those. One of the things that I've really appreciated has been the explosion, maybe even of folks talking about disability and talking about it in their really localized perspective. Mm-hmm. And whether that's writing about personal experience or writing about a particular kind of embodiment that has impacted them or affected them or been related to them or been intriguing to them in some way. So there is now so much we can find on folks writing about the autism spectrum or neurodivergence or mental health. Beautiful stuff coming out on depression and anxiety. People writing still about mobility impairment, but in a way that, again, can be so much more localized than when I started writing about this. I'm relating to that in a lot of ways now because
your more recent encounters with understanding disability with spinal cord.
So 2 years ago, I had a spinal cord injury. It's at the level of C5, so it's a very high injury, leaving me paralyzed from the armpits on down. Gives me a whole different perspective, both because it's still new. And so I am very much experiencing loss and I'm very much experiencing barriers for the first time that I hadn't encountered and that I don't know how to get around yet. And very much feeling like, okay, so if one way I flawed early on was writing a little too universally, although I did, even in my book, tried to talk a little bit about deaf culture and about cognitive difference as also embodying limits models in different kinds of ways. But now I'm very much like, the only thing I want to write about right now is the things that I'm experiencing and the ways in which my imagination is being piqued through this. And I'm doing that right now on a Substack called Curiosity on Wheels.
I love it. I want to say Paige also loves that. Go ahead, Paige.
I was just telling Andy earlier, I'm like, I've never met her before, but I feel like I know her. But I was so like excited to find you on Substack. I feel like when somebody gives you that sort of like professional recommendation or like, you know, find them on this platform or whatever, you're always kind of like, I don't know. And then I found you so easily and you're active there and you're trying different things on there and just trying to, you know, figure out how to get your voice out there and your stories. And how did you...
Curiosity on Wheels is just a fun title, too.
It's so good.
It's a fun title.
Yeah, it's so good.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, it just got to be a place. I got to the point in my own recovery where things were kind of stable, and I'm in a nursing home right now. And I just needed a place where I could share my story, in part because, and this is just my own personal orientation, I am so compelled by interdependence that part of me, both tangibly and also in bigger ways, like I feel like I need a big community, my big community. So a lot of the folks on Substack are students I've had or people I've been to conference, people I know one way or another. Yeah. So I feel like I'm talking to my friends and my family and I want this sense of we're all in this together and I need them. So that just got me to be like, I'm going to tell these stories and sometimes they're going to be about disability theology or things I'm learning now. And sometimes they're going to be about ordinary little moments in the nursing home or wherever.
Yeah. So good.
Oh, thank you so much. Reading your work, but then even especially like with the Substack, the one where you experimented with voice memo. I don't know, we can talk later about all the things you found in that process, but I just loved when I heard your voice, like, oh, I so much more just want to talk. So it was great. So thanks for spending time with us and sharing your life and your reflections. Wow, that was such a treat to have a conversation with Debbie, somebody that I've really admired, who can be creative and like ask questions that nobody's asking. Like, how do we think about disability? How do we think about God in light of disability? Oh, man, that was really a fun conversation.
Yeah, and what an incredible story she has, just coming from her own sort of curiosity about disability and now, you know, experiencing it, you know, and being able to, I think, draw from so much time and heart and research in her, you know, her situation now. And there's still, man, such a joy and levity about her and a warmth about her. And I was so inspired.
What a warmth. She had such warmth just to dialogue. I still was blown away that a couple of times, like, well, what do you think about this that I'm wrestling with in light of disability and who is God? And she's like, oh, that's a really good, I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. It wasn't my goal, but it was one of those like, oh, wow, we're really digging into this. So I hope you guys enjoyed, and we will be with you again on another conversation of Blind Faith. This has been another episode of Blind Faith. Enjoy having you with us, and come stick around. If you like this one, give us a click like, and whatever platform you're on, give us a rating, and go ahead and subscribe. We're glad you're here with us. We'll be with you again soon.